Welcome to the OIME Talks podcast. I'm your host, David Petro. This podcast is a public preview to our monthly OIME webinar. Those monthly webinars are repeats of sessions from our most recent annual conference in May. This week, we have Chad Harris giving us a preview of his session, Wait, What Was I Learning? Shedding Light on Neurodivergent Experiences in the Classroom, which will be live on October 8th. And just one note about today's podcast, you might hear some sounds in the background. That's just Chad's golden retriever, Rosie, making her first podcast appearance. And so without further ado, let's get right to it. Okay, so I'm talking with Chad Harris. Chad, how are you doing?
Great. It's a beautiful Tuesday.
It is a beautiful Tuesday when we're recording this. Chad, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and how you connect yourself to math.
I am currently I'm an intermediate math teacher. And I also, as part of my job, I'm a small group intervention math specialist in a sense. So I work with students in a regular classroom, but then I also am using diagnostics and identifying which of the students in our student body have some really large gaps and then pulling them out of other classrooms and working with them to kind of really fill those gaps with math. I've been teaching math. It's that moment on the seniority list that you don't even want to see it anymore. I think it's almost 26 years now. And so it's been a really great experience for me overall. I started in math, and then I really got into science and bounced around a bit. And then I've come back to math as a full swing.
And when you say intermediate teacher, are you talking grade 7-8 or grade 9-10 or both?
Right. Grade 7 and 8 is really where most of my experience has been.
Okay. Good to hear. And, you know, I try to ask all of our guests, you know, where they first heard of or got involved with OIME, just to get a sense of, you know, how we got connected.
Yeah, I would say I had started and really got into the science world first. So I really heard about OIME from my partner, Rhonda Hewer. So that's kind of my connection to it. And then from there, I've presented there a couple times and just really had a chance to visit and be a part of the conference for the last few years. With my board, I was a math intervention specialist, which allowed me the time to come in and really get involved in the whole conference itself. But again, I have to attribute my wife for getting me involved in the first place.
And so is this the first time you presented, or you presented before?
I presented with her probably about 6 or 7 years ago. This year, 2025 in May, by myself. And then in 2024, I presented with a team that I was a part of, a math intervention specialist team that my board had created. So I presented there 3 or 4 times now.
Now, how do you find presenting, you know, as a team versus presenting on your own?
For me, presenting as a team is a little bit less stress, I'd say, because usually I'm diagnosed with ADHD. So usually there's somebody else on the team that is very organized and has scripted everything out and said, okay, here's the time you have and here's what you're responsible for. So that's kind of nice to have. Doing it on my own, there's that sense of like, I have to do this all by myself and no one's coming in to go, hey, here's your timeline and here's some constraints. So for me, the team aspect is a lot more comfortable and has some safeguards on it versus me doing it by myself.
So as someone who also lives with ADHD, I think that's a perfect segue into what your session is about. The title, long but quite informative, was I learning? Shedding light on neurodivergent experience in the classroom. That's what we're going to have our webinar on this month. I'm wondering if you could shed some light on what you're going to be talking about.
So my idea of the presentation itself was one of sharing my story and my experience of being a student going through our public education system, as well as being a teacher in our system and working with students and working with my ADHD as well. So it was more about sharing my story and having kind of humanizing the whole experience and helping people understand what neurodivergence is as an experience versus from a research standpoint saying, well, here's what research has said we need to do. And I really, even from the presentation, the number of people that had come up to me and just wanted to share their stories and wanted to share their experiences and the things that resonated with them was really way more than I ever anticipated. I kind of expected to go up and share my story and people go, oh, that's great. But it was really way more impactful than I thought, just from people saying, oh my gosh, you know, I have a student like that, or my child is like that and I didn't recognize this, or that part of your story really resonated with me. I struggle with that. So it was really great to see how much people connected with just the chance for me to share the stories that I have had through my experience.
And so will you be sort of speaking to your experience as a student or as a teacher or both?
I think a little bit of both. I mean, the story from a standpoint of helping other teachers, the standpoint of me as a educator kind of helps with regards to how I interact with students that have ADHD. But I think even just making sure that I share some of the experiences and some of the struggles that I had growing up, as well as some of the struggles I still have, is a valuable thing for teachers to help them kind of better understand where some of their students are coming from. And not just where they're coming from, but also remember that some of the things that they're experiencing are like a genuine everyday struggle, and that it's okay to get frustrated, but also what are some strategies or some things that we can do to really kind of see the story behind some of the things we have to deal with in class.
So I know for myself, I wasn't diagnosed until, you know, quite a ways into my adulthood and quite a ways into my teaching. And, you know, I'm kind of embarrassed to say, you know, how I sort of, I guess, for lack of a better word, treated students who were in the same boat, perhaps wasn't as generous as I was once I sort of found that I was a kindred spirit. And, you know, when I was diagnosed, you know, so much of my life made much more sense that I didn't really have a name for. And I became much more empathetic to the students in front of my class. And again, I was pretty embarrassed that I wasn't before. So I think that is a really important aspect of having students who are neurodivergent in our classes is, you know, helping teachers understand who don't have that experience on, you know, how to deal with that. So, you know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, how we can help teachers who don't have that as their own experience bring it to the classroom when their classroom is, you know, has those students in them?
Yeah. And it's interesting because my story is very similar. Like I wasn't diagnosed until I think it was 35.
Yes.
Finally, you know, my partner and I were just looking at this going, okay, this isn't working the way it is. And of course you talk to your doctor and you go through some testing and the testing that I had said 100% blatantly, like, oh my gosh, how have you got this far?
Yeah.
So it was, again, similar to you. It makes a lot of getting that sort of diagnosis really brings a lot of realities and you recognize a lot of issues that you had growing up and recognizing, oh, this is why these things happen. But the same thing, it was also that moment of sitting back and going, oh, but if I had known that 10 years ago, you know, exactly what you said, that empathy and the way that I would have dealt with a lot of the students that crossed my classroom would have been such a different idea. But then I think also just that journey as well is part of where that empathy comes from, because I fully understand teachers having a varying level of students with ADHD in a class and the issues it causes on a regular basis and the disruptions it causes and the uncertainty and just, I mean, even from a sense of ADHD itself, we are still learning so much about it. I mean, you think of the last 10 years, we would identify ADHD with that hyperactive sense of the kid who is always going and can't stop and just can't focus on things. But we're really, in the last probably 2 or 3 years, the focus has really been looking at how it's different in females versus males and how that other component of ADHD does show up as anxiety. And even from my aspect, it helps me be really empathetic to that other side of the attention deficit side of it, looking at how it presents in a classroom and how I can take what I've learned and help students understand kind of what it looks like and why things are the way they are for them. And it's not just a, I can't do this. It's a, well, this is your reality. And what can we do? And what are some things we can help with some tools so that you, it's not a, an impossible task. It is a, it's just a task that you're going to have to work a little bit harder at.
Yeah. You know, that aspect of, you know, I can't do this. You know, it comes up a lot in discussions I have with students, and in some ways having my own diagnosis, it gives me a little bit more ability to have some street cred with them when I say, you know, that ADHD can be a reason the way you feel that way, or the way you might feel when it comes to doing these things, but it can't be an excuse.
Yeah.
And it's not like it's going to go away. So
no,
we have to figure out how to live with it and be productive and have that, you know, try to look for the positives in that diagnosis.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's other great positives too. For instance, with my ADHD, I can't drown out background noise. I either focus on one thing and hear nothing, or I hear everything. And so that's something I share with my students, from a sense of when I'm teaching a lesson, that any of that talking or moving stuff around or moving your chair or giggling about something, that becomes, I become hypersensitive to that. And so when I say, hey, stop doing that, sometimes a student without knowing things might go, well, what are you on? I just moved my chair. But with me sharing that this is something I have to live with every day, students can look at that and say, okay, I understand why you are so big on, you really want me to just sit still and not click things and not talk to anyone. And so then, but the other side of that too is to help from a negotiating standpoint. I also make sure that if I do have a lesson, like we time it, like I pull up the iPhone and we time it so that I try and keep it within 10 minutes. So my expectation is, okay, I need you to really be quiet because I can't drown out noise and it really bugs me. But the other side of that is I'm only going to talk for 10 minutes and then you're going to have you're going to have your own time to talk. So that's one of those things that I've worked through for many, many years, just creating a balance so that they understand some things I need from them, but then I also have to be able to be malleable and look at, okay, what can I do to help your experience so that you don't have to be super silent and not move at all while I talk rambling for 30 minutes. Plus, I mean, having a time limit for someone with ADHD is such an important thing.
And I also think it's important for students both with and without ADHD to see your strategies that you use for yourself, and that, like, this is not something to be ashamed of. This is just the way you are.
And I so agree with you. And I think one of the, especially since COVID, one of the big factors that I see in the students I work with is they're when I first started, there was that sense of you walk in the classroom and you respected the teacher because that was the teacher and this is what you did. And I think one of the things that COVID kind of altered is you have students that are a little bit more critical and a little bit more, they had their voices a little bit more prevalent in the sense of they're going to talk to you and challenge you on things. And so having that connection and having that human aspect of I am a human and I'm going to make mistakes, that really helps cement a relationship more than just you're in my class, this is what happens, and just do it. So I think I've seen a real sense of that change in the sense students are kind of questioning, why do I have to do this? And why is this important? And why do we do this way? Which is 100% what they should be doing at their age. And so my job then is to make sure that I can create answers for that and create reasons for that so that it doesn't just become do it because. And I think that's where sometimes people really end up getting into some conflict, is they're trying to expect things to happen. And I think it's great that students are questioning things. It's a matter of making sure you come up with a reason for them.
Okay. So your session is, I assume, going to focus on ideas to help these students in math class, and maybe probably some things that are more general. I'm wondering if you could give us a few ideas that we could take right now and maybe implement in our class tomorrow to help students who might be in this situation.
Yeah. And I mean, that's part of what the session was. I had a chance to just ask people what they thought some strategies would be for. So I kind of had some students, some profiles of students they might have in their classroom, and just what are some things that they could really allow and bring to their classroom, just from a sense of exactly that. What are some things I could help students with? So I think one of the first ones is, for me, that time, having students be able to understand the time frame of, okay, I'm doing this for 10 minutes, and then you're going to be able to get a chance to talk. I think also that neurodivergence is also really linked with the sense of time and the sense of managing yourself. So even when students are working on a worksheet for me or working on a task for me, and we have 20 minutes for that task, having some sort of, you can go online and find all these visual timers that aren't not a clock ticking down, because again, that doesn't give you a sense of time. But really, like a timer, like an egg timer sort of thing, that they can see that shaded area getting smaller and smaller in every one of those tasks, just so they have a sense of time going by. Because again, you get that ADHD student who you talk with them, they start off, they do the first task, but really they haven't heard all of it. They've heard that first thing, so they get that first thing done, and then they totally get lost in some other thought that they had, and you come back and they've written three sentences, and you said, but I give you 20 minutes. What happened? So just, I really do that a lot, is just have those visual timers for students and also know who those kids are in. And it doesn't mean I'm going to sit down with them, but just check in with them and say, okay, so see how much of the timer has gone by, and halfway, how are you doing? Where do you think where should you be, and where are you now? What can I do to help you? That I have found really helps students become better at that task of managing time, because that is from a neurodivergent standpoint, the management of time is probably the biggest thing that they struggle with. So, and then the other aspects too are just looking at when you're giving them a task or when you're expecting something from them, what are some things you can do to help them be able to chunk it down into, you know, the task is, I want you to answer these six questions. Well, let's chunk it down to, let's do two and then go for a little walk around the room, and then do two more and go for a walk around the room. And chunking it down into manageable things is a lot easier than just saying, okay, you're going to do the whole task. Here's the whole task, get done. Because you think that's something that we could handle, but it's too much when they're on question two and they see six more and they don't have any idea of how much time is left. And then somebody across the room is, you know, giggling or scribbling something with a pencil, and now I forgot what I was doing in the first place.
So how do you find that some of these strategies help students who are not neurodivergent?
Again, you know, I could take probably, I don't want to say, probably 40% of the students I work with, whether they're neurodivergent or not, and their ability to manage themselves with time is not, I would say, ideal. So taking the time to do this, the kids that know how to do it are already doing it, and they're going to fit right in and go, yeah, I can do this. This is great. This is easy. The students who really have a hard time with that, they're going to look at that and utilize it. And it becomes part of our everyday. So it becomes something that they just get in the habit of doing. And the great part for neurodivergence is creating habits. So if we can have them do a habit, the great part about a habit is not, you don't have to remember it. You don't have to think about it. It just happens. So if I have a habit of, when you come in, you grab your workbook, you sit down and you answer these three questions, people with neurodivergence create habits exactly the same as everyone else. So if I can get them to repeat the same action regularly, it just becomes something they don't even think about. And because they sometimes have a hard time making connections and thinking about things, anytime we can create a good habit is a super helpful thing for them and everybody.
Okay. So we don't really want to give away your entire talk. And I say that every month when I say this. And so we're just giving a little teaser here. So Chad, thanks for talking to us today. And we look forward to your webinar this month.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
That was Chad Harris giving us a preview of his upcoming webinar entitled, Wait, What Was I Learning? Shedding Light on Neurodivergent Experiences in the Classroom. This webinar is for OME members only, and they can register at our MCIS registration site. The link can be found in the description. Next month, we'll be talking with Stacey Jacobs, where she will be previewing her session, Empowering Math Learners, Executive Function Strategies to Support Math Learning. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, stay safe.